Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of naturenow@kptz.org.
Hello, this is Deborah Kelso, host of this edition of Nature Now for the third week of April. This week, we are very happy to have for you part two of a show that we recorded back in February. Our topic is the Manus mastodon, an archaeological find which turned out to be one of the most important discoveries of its kind in North America, unearthed in our very own backyard in nearby Squim. Our guest is Claire Manus Hattler. She and her husband, Emmanuel Manny Manus, discovered what became known as the Manus mastodon back in 1977, literally unearthing the unique mastodon bones in their own backyard in Squim when they were embarking upon digging an irrigation pond at their farm. We start our show where we left off in part one, which aired last month. Claire had so many interesting stories to tell us, not only about the mastodon find, but about living in the Squim area back in the 1970s, that we never left the museum for the field site. So the recording sounds a bit echoey in the beginning because we were recording in the Squim Museum and Arts Building, the Red Barn right in the middle of downtown Squim. They have a great display of the mastodon bones, along with many other cool things, so you should all be sure to go visit. We had wanted to start our recording with Claire there because of their mastodon display. And Museum Director Judith Stipe most graciously offered to open the museum for us on a normally closed Sunday to allow us to record when it was more quiet. About three quarters of the way through the program, we head out to the site where the bones were found, in one of the fields in Happy Valley, just east of Squim, part of the family farm that Claire and her family still own. Now on to our show. When we left off last time, it was a cliffhanger. Claire was telling us about the dig, and at that time you thought that they were mammoth bones, but it turned out that Dr. Gustafson found that they were mastodons because of the tooth, right? The tooth is really unusual.
And the difference, but we didn't even realize that what a mastodon really was because of all the mammoth information around. And of course, even at the museum over in Victoria, there's a big mammoth reproduction.
And mastodons are slightly smaller than
there is
mammoths,
a big
right?
Big difference between the two elephants. They're both elephants. The mastodon goes back further in prehistory to almost 100,000 years ago. They evolved from that particular line of elephants, if you want to call it. The mammoth, on the other hand, may be 30 or 40,000 years ago. And the mammoth, and now we know mastodon, became extinct about 10,000 years ago. But the difference between the two, they were both Ice Age elephants. They probably all had hair on them and so forth. But the mammoth were grass eaters, like the present day elephants and so forth. Their teeth were entirely different because they were eating off the ground. And it was at that time, during the Ice Age and so forth, a lot of gravel, stone and everything, so their teeth would wear down. Well, their teeth were made of enamel plates that ran vertically, and they could be up to seven inches long, deep. They wore down. They might get six or seven sets of these teeth over a lifetime. The mastodon, on the other hand, had teeth more or less like us. They looked like a huge molar. That's one tooth there. There's another tooth in front of that, and both mandibles had two teeth in the bottom and two teeth in the upper jaw. But the lower jaw had four teeth, and that was the biggest one. The mammoth were larger. They were the quarterback, tall, four legs, and back and tall and with a large lump on the top of their head. Very easy to tell the difference if you saw them walking around. The mastodon were like an Indian elephant, 9 or 10 foot at this. This is called American mastodon. The mastodon had a low back. You can see here, he didn't have a big lump on top of his head. He was bulky like the lineman,
yeah.
Big, heavy, his forelegs and his rear legs. His tusks were heavier, and they weren't as curved and as long as a mammoth one. Now, these bones, like I say, have been in wet sediments for 14,000 years. And when they started to dry, they start falling apart. So they got down in the trench, especially the State Historic Preservation Officer and Dr. Doherty. I mean, they were down there in the muck and water covering these bones or not wanting to disturb anything. The bones that were disturbed by Manny with the backhoe, they've forgiven him, even though he went right through them. If he'd gone 3 or 4 feet to either side with that trench, he would have missed those tusks, and he would never have realized that there was a lot of other bones in there because they were wet and they all looked like dirt anyway. You know, they didn't show that gray color until they were exposed to the air.
And then they found in one of the ribs.
They found a rib. When Gustafson picked up the rib from where it was in situ, actually, he wiped the muck off it, and at one end of the rib, there was something rough. Yeah, so cleaning the rib, found another piece of broken bone that was embedded in this rib, in the top of the rib. Say the rib right near the where it goes into the spine up there, right below there. This isn't right. And so we got a microscope from the high school to examine it closely. And he said, it looks like it was in there before the animal died. It looks like some healing there. So he sent this piece of rib bone with this, whatever was embedded in, to an x-ray place over in Bellevue for special. And that revealed that, yes, indeed, it is a bone, and it comes to a point about a half inch inside that rib bone. And it does look like it shows some way. Let's hold up. This was a needle in the haystack.
Yeah.
Actually, because that's what they're looking for. Why are you looking for some sign that associates these prehistoric things with man, with people? They would love to find the people that old, but anyway, they found an old elephant that had some distinction that wasn't natural. Another animal couldn't make a bone point and get it in that mastodon.
And that didn't
about
kill,
8 foot
that,
off the
that
ground.
That didn't kill
didn't
the
kill
animal.
No.
And that's why it was preserved,
right,
is because
right,
it was healed over, right?
That's right. That's right. So whoever was hunting them missed the mark, and it hit the rib instead.
But, and, I mean, the story just keeps getting better. Then they found that point was made from another mastodon.
Well, that was later on.
But it was really old. I mean, it was way older than the first people that they thought were in this area.
You're
right?
Jumping ahead.
I'm jumping ahead.
And yes, okay, he found that, and he said, yeah, this appears to be a spear point. And at the time, we were still talking mammoth.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we were still talking mammoth. They hadn't found the tooth yet. So they found the point first. But that was enough to get them excited, because it showed man was around at the time the mammoths were around. They had found that kind of evidence in other places in North America, in the United States, of camps, butcher sites, of mammoth butcher sites with points associated with it. So they knew man was hunting mammoth. That wasn't really big news, but it still was news up here in the Northwest. It's whim. when they do an archaeological dig, they have to be very scientific because you just can't dig in and throw things. Oh, I found this. You know, you have to know exactly where they were. You have datum points. And we work with it in a 3-meter square. Everything is photographed. Everything is measured depth-wise, every possible way. And probably now it's all satellites and radar and all that stuff. Back then, no, it was the good old way. But anyway, they were starting to work down through the sediments. They had peeled most of the upper peat off. They were down at a level where they started finding the bones. Something was coming up. They used water to dig with because this is a wet site. So water washes away the sediments and leaves a stone or a bone or whatever sitting on a little pedestal. And then from there, photograph and exactly where they found it and what it was, whether it was a stone point or a flake or a bone. And something was washing away, and the upper part of it that was showing looked like a clamshell, something like that. Well, when they finally removed it very slowly, they found out it was a tooth, but it wasn't a mammoth tooth. It was a mastodon tooth that was worn practically down to the gum lines. But number one, that was an old mastodon. That changed the story again, and that went worldwide. The first time they'd ever found direct evidence of man hunting mastodon on a North American continent.
Yep.
Wow.
So then it hit the newspapers all over the world. And that's when the University of Washington really got interested.
And it was like, too late for you.
And the funny thing about it is, Dr. Doherty's wife, Phyllis, went to school with the artist, I can't remember her name, I've got the art, that did the editorial art for the Seattle Times. And that, when the news came out, he had made this cartoon of a elephant, and then under the thing he wrote, the editorial was written about what a great find. It wasn't it nice of those people to be interested and to call the right people? Too bad that the University of Washington didn't answer their phone.
Oh, so funny.
A real dig at the end. I've got the art.
Oh, that's perfect.
As far as Dr. Gustafson and with all the evidence he has found, he was there right from the beginning, 1977, every summer, or every season, with a field school, investigating and finding more and more evidence that this animal not only had died there and with the wound, but he had been butchered. So he had all that evidence. The dating has changed. They didn't do DNA tests and so forth back there. So Gustafson didn't have that type of technology to work with. But what he had at the time, which was early 80s, all the evidence that he put together and wrote about was right on. Before Gustafson died, he had gotten all the stuff together, which is now in Tacoma at the Washington State Historical Society Research Center. WSU, everybody kind of lost interest, or he was challenged by what they call the Clovis people, the people who believe that the Clovis point, a point that is a stone point, is
and
older.
It's called the Clovis point because it was originally found back in the 1930s in Clovis, New Mexico,
I think. Right. And then, so archaeologists are always trying to unprove what another one says is proof and so forth. That's the name of the game, and it's good. That's the way science is. You challenge it. So he was always being challenged that, oh, this couldn't be, and, oh, the two elephants crashed together, and that's how the point got in, and, you know, making up all these crazy stories. Well, archaeologist from Texas A&M called Gus one day, and he said, could I borrow that broken rib bone with the bone projectile point in it and do all kinds of experiments with all the new technology and either prove you're right or wrong? And Gus says, be my friend. Do it.
Great.
And so that's what he did. He had it there for about a year, and he came back with the first. He proved that it was a bone point, and he proved that with DNA testing that it was a mastodon bone point, but it was from a different mastodon. Now, years ago, you wouldn't know that, but he had the technology now that he could tell the DNA and so forth that that mastodon bone that was embedded in the Manus mastodon was of a different mastodon. So that was very significant, and he went along, you know, he said, yes, and it comes at an angle, and he had most of what you just came out again, 10 years later. Maybe not that long, 5 years later. He's been examining that point for a long time. In fact, we really had to get it back from him when we wanted the materials to be in the research center in Washington State. We didn't want that down in Texas at A&M. So that report that was just came out, it again qualified and said, yes, definitely, we did some more engineering. They managed in many different technical ways to actually rebuild the point so that they could tell exactly what kind of a point it was, and then he verified that, oh yeah, they did say, they said it was 13,800, or which was older than Clovis, which I think is 13,500, so it's a big deal.
Which proved that there were people here hunting mastodons before the Clovis people were here.
Right from the beginning, this was the first time they'd ever found evidence of man hunting mastodon on the North American continent. And then since Gus's discovery, yes, there's been other sites that are in that more or less age, but not quite.
Yeah, well, it's a wonderful find. And we have to wrap it up here at the museum because we're going to go to see the farm site. We're going to go see where the dig was itself. So we're going to carry on in just a few moments when we get to the farm. We really wanted to come to the actual site, and it's here off Happy Valley where you guys used to live, and you still own the property and the house.
That's the house and the barn and the garage shop behind it, all those buildings. But the original house and barn Manny built, an extension at front room was added on after I married my present husband.
Because Manny passed away from cancer in 2000,
yes.
Right? Yes, we're so sad about that.
But before he died,
he left us this beautiful plaque, and it's now registered National Historic Place.
It was presented to us at the time the site was open, back in the early 80s. The plaque was presented, and it's the first time they'd ever presented a plaque of this kind to an archaeological site. You'll find these kind of plaques on historic buildings, but this is the first time they did it for an archaeological site. There's a one down in the corner there. And when it went on the National Register of Historic Places, it went on the day, happened to be his birthday, March 21st.
That's perfect.
So they didn't know that, and we certainly didn't know that. So that was, it meant
pretty
to
special.
Be, I think. Even the name, Man is here.
Yeah, likely the oldest proof we have of humans in North America. That spear point in that mastodon is incredibly significant.
Yeah, moved the time back to 13,900 years.
That's right. Yeah, I know. I love looking at this and thinking of it as this prairie site. And they found like cactus pollen here. And when they were doing the dig, it was just a hive of activity, right? You had
tens of thousands. What did you say, 50,000 people come
through?
That
was over a period of from 1978 to 1985. So each summer it would be open to the public. And during that time we had at least 50,000 people a total going through from all over the world.
The bones are now, part of them are at the Squim Museum, but the bulk of them are in Tacoma, right?
They are at the Washington State Historical Society Research Center. So all those bones and artifacts that relate to this mastodon that shows that man was here are all there.
Well, it's a huge gift to all of us. I mean, the fact that you found those bones and you contacted the right people. I mean, it was a huge interruption to your lives to just put everything on hold and kind of turn over such a large part of your property to being researched.
Hey, you only live it for a few years. Out of 13,900 years, it's not even a drop in the bucket. And what was I going to do with this? You know, I mean, this belongs to history and prehistory. It belongs to everybody. You don't own anything, and you certainly don't own land.
Well, I would like to think that, and I'm really glad that you think that way, but not all people would think that way. Some people would have gone, oh, let's get rid of these bones so that we can build our pond and develop the property.
And that was the purpose of why we opened it to the public, to try and educate people to how important it is not to overlook something like that. Oh, I found a bear point in the front yard. Isn't that exciting? Look, I put it on the shelf and it's just great. Well, where did it came from? Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't know. Now you know. You find something like that, find out. Call the right people who can give you that information. It's not something for you to possess for a few years and maybe give to your kids or something like that. It's meaningless that way.
They're still finding out stuff. Like we said,
absolutely,
that just last week they came out with this Texas A&M dating that confirmed Dr. Gustafson's earlier dating techniques.
Right.
And by saving the pieces, then you can always go back as techniques improve and discover even more information
right
about them.
The methods of retrieving information like this from the ground has improved so great. They don't destroy to find. That's why everything is recorded, because once they tear the page out of the book isn't any good anymore.
Yep.
Now they do less damage when they're looking for something like that. There's so many different ways to excavate without using a shovel.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, what we didn't include in the museum, we went afterwards to look at the film, but Manny put together this great film of the different stages of the excavation, and it was really fun to see and imagine what this place looked like when they were digging it up and finding all these great new things every day or every few days.
Problem in this country that when you find something that's so valuable to mankind, the people that would like to examine it and so forth, they have to ask the permission of the owner. And like I say, I don't think anybody owns anything, but especially something like this, there's no law that it only affects a public project like a highway. Before they start disturbing, they have to have an archaeological team to come in to find stuff. But most of the property is private property, and private property has their right to whatever under the ground, and that they buy that too, I suppose. And that's not right. You go to Europe and places like England and Wales and Ireland and stuff, they respect and honor the past. And so if they find something like that, the archaeologists and stuff take over and see what's there.
Yeah.
Old Roman towns and so forth. So mm-hmm. Yeah, we haven't learned that in this new country.
Yeah.
We're too young and dumb.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we'll learn in time. And and I see, speaking of time, I see that we've run out of time once again. But if you in the radio audience would like to learn more about this great find, please take your own field trip to the Squim Museum and Arts Barn and come out to view the National Historic Place where these ancient bones were found. The recent article in the Squim Gazette on February 22nd of this year also gives a very nice overview of what was found and also a couple of articles printed in the summer of 2012, the Washington State University magazine. And part one of this program can be heard as a podcast on KPTZ. So thanks so much once again to Claire Manis-Hattler for taking the time to speak with us. It's been a true delight. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you for giving me this opportunity to try and educate the public.
That's right. Well, that's what we're all about. And thanks to Jill for facilitating and her dad and uncle for being our additional guides and Meg for being our faithful field recorder, to Nora Petrich for being our sound editor, and to all of you for listening. As always, wishing you happy trails.
Closing music this week is Digging Up Bones by Randy Travis, accompanied by Josh Turner.
Out from our old dresser drawer. I set it on the table and I talked to it till four. I read some old love letters right up till the break of dawn. Yeah, I've been sitting alone digging up bones. Then I went through the jewelry and I found our wedding rings. Put mine on my finger, and I gave yours a fling. Across this lonely bedroom of our recent broken home, yeah, tonight I'm sitting alone, digging up bones. I'm digging up bones, I'm digging up bones. Exhuming things that's better left alone. But I'm resurrecting of love that's dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone digging up bones. And I went through the closet and I found some things in there, like that pretty negligee that I bought you to wear. And I recall how good you looked each time you had it on. Yeah, tonight I'm sitting alone, digging up bones. I'm digging up bones, I'm digging up bones. Exhuming things that's better left alone. I'm resurrecting memories of a love that's dead and gone. Yeah, tonight I'm sitting alone, digging up bones. Dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone, digging up bones. I'm digging up bones. Exhuming things that's better left alone. I'm resurrecting memories of a love that's dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone, digging up bones. I'm digging up bones. Better left alone. I'm ready.